never had a 151 Lim Chu Kang because those days we didn't have postal code. But the house was built by the family, and that was, I think now would be about 106 years old. Just underneath the floorboards, it's a huge colony of swallows. And the bats, I think, lived with them as well. Because in the morning when we wake up, we were woken up by birds, the swallows going out of their nest. And in the evening, the swallows would come back, and then the bats would go out. The Sultan of Johor came to visit. He said, "Can we come ashore?" I think the boat was too big to come near to where the pier is, the landing of the pier. So two guys jumped into the sea and carried the Sultan on their backs to bring him to shore. And my husband then entertained him to some breakfast. If I were to invite anybody, they said, "Wow, so far." And you know, in Singapore, everywhere, I think if you take more than 15 minutes, what is wow so far? And then we always had to give directions to anybody delivering anything because they say, "Oh, it's okay, okay, I will just give me the address and look for it." So you'll never be able to find it. But the actual address is actually 151 Lim Chu Kang.
Hi, my name is Charles and I come from Singapore. And that was an interview I conducted with Lily Cashin, who actually lived in this house that was along the coast of Singapore. And actually, I was quite surprised when I found her living in this island because actually, there was this thing called the Four Shores Act that was implemented in the 70s by the government. It was a law, actually, that was inherited by colonial British called the Four Shores Act that granted the state power to relocate communities living along any shore. So actually what happened was that if you go around Singapore nowadays, you'll never see anybody that's living along the shore. It's all state property. But to my surprise, I found this house and she was living there and all that. And somehow she kind of got this loophole and she managed to hang on to it. And it was an agreement with the British colonials, actually. And then when the husband actually passed, they moved out of the house. So that situation doesn't exist anymore. I'm showing you a map of Singapore from 1968. And I would like to talk about disappearances, actually. In this map, you'll see the word island, actually, in the chart. You know, Singapore is still referred to as an island, Singapore Island. And this is a map from 1979. And note that actually Singapore had already become a sovereign nation actually by then. But this on the chart actually is still referred to as Singapore Island. And then sometime between 1979 and 2014, the word actually island disappears. Singapore is simply referred to as Singapore. So with the word disappearance of the word island, I would begin to find other forms of disappearances, actually, or erasures in regards to islands in Singapore waters. There are many islands in Singapore which were named with seemingly negative connotations, which in a modern state of Singapore came to be associated with the primitive or the superstitious. One such island was Sentosa, which was previously called Belakang Mati, which in Malay translates as death behind. One such other island, this is a chart from 1924, this location. It's called Pulau Hantu. And in Malay, this island actually translates as Ghost Island. And here's an article, actually, from 1983, and it reads, Pulau Hantu gets up its ghost. It's now called Pulau Keppel. Pulau Hantu had been renamed Pulau Keppel. Keppel Shipyard, which is developing the island into a shipbuilding, ship repair base, has been allowed to change the name of the island, which it considers inappropriate. Pulau Hantu literally translate means ghost island. May not go well down with customers or employees. Keppel told the government, and yesterday the Commissioner of Lands gave the yard the permission for the change. So this is Pulau Keppel now, actually. And it's actually, currently it's a private yacht club for the super rich, and it's managed by the Keppel Corporation. So we go back to the island, Pulau Belakang Mati. I would like to recall how I interview that I conducted with Singapore's first non-European hydrographer, Captain Wilson Chua, who had all the charts that I present here. I borrowed them from him, actually. He collects all these charts. He actually pointed out to me that there was a poetic connection in the names of the different islands in Singapore. For instance, Pulau Belakang Mati actually rhymes with the island that's actually next to it, Pulau Brani. So you kind of say like, Belakang Mati, Pulau Brani. And that was actually a way that the local people, the Malay people, actually met and remembered the islands actually around the area. And then in 1969, the Singapore Tourism Board created a naming contest called New Name for Pulau Belakang Mati, with the first prize of $500. Sorry, I left something. And then what happened was that there was an article actually that came out and that announced the winners, and was called The Five Who Thought Alike win Sentosa Prize. Their occupations may be very different, but when it comes down to the choice of the name, they think alike. They are the five people who chose the name Sentosa, or Tranquility, what the man has been looking for since time immemorial, as the new name for the former Belakang Mati is now renamed Sentosa. So this article came out, and actually, interestingly, actually, one of the people that submitted the names was actually Lee Kuan Yew's brother. And then somebody wrote back in and said that he was complaining, actually, and he said that someone wrote into the editorial of the section of the Straits Times, Sentosa is the new name for Pulau Belakang Mati. And he wrote there and he said, but I remember that when the contest was advertised, the competitors were called to coin a name that was to have bearing with Singapore's history and culture. I'm sure the majority of people who participated in the contest must have been badly misled by the tourism board. Is Sentosa a name that is based on a particular history or culture of the Republic? Definitely not. I trouble myself in writing this because I honestly feel that there are far better name could have been coined, initial RME. And then the state replies in a section called Government Replies and brushed off the complaint and proceeded to rename the island from Belakang Mati to Sentosa. So in 1983, actually, a visiting drill ship gets caught by the strong tides around Sentosa as it unwittingly exposed its broadside to the currents and swept along with it. The drill ship's tower hits the cable car system. Several cable cars plunged into the sea. A total of seven people died, as reported in this article. Apparently, there's an annual death toll of three drownings per year around Sentosa. So what I did was I went around to the coast of Sentosa and... Hey, wait. And I, actually, as a sailor, I kind of know that the currents around Sentosa are actually incredibly strong. So from how I look at it, actually, the word death behind is actually perhaps just a warning, you know, of like, don't. It's probably a practical name, actually. So there's a buoy actually outside the coast down there, and it's called Sentosa. And I would like, perhaps, you know, this buoy should be called, renamed Pulau Belakang Mati. There's another site around Sentosa, which was previously a reef. And this place is actually called Sentosa Cove. And it's the only place in Singapore where foreigners can buy land and live in Singapore. So people like, what's that guy, the Facebook guy? The Brazilian dude, he lives there now. So there are a lot of rich people that are trying to run away from tax, and then they live there, and that's all they do. They don't really work, actually. And it's kind of strange. It used to be a reef, and it's been reclaimed into this so-called, like, nature gated community, actually. People from outside can't go in, actually. I'll move on to present another form of disappearing island. But before that, I would like to touch on something that I've always wanted to think about through my art practice, and that is the issue of land reclamation. Singapore has grown more than 25% of its original size, perhaps the most peaceful examples of land expansion witnessed without war. Here's a UN map, actually, which shows Singapore increasing from 1973 to 2013. And this is a dredging ship called Goriho from Korea, South Korea. It's a dredging ship, and it's actually sucking sand from the seabed. And I encountered this ship, actually, when I was out researching, and it was situated between Singapore and Indonesia. And I actually traveled to Karimun, which was another island in Indonesia, which all the granite material for Singapore comes from, actually. And I could see, like, you know, obviously a lot of this mining going on there. So every day there are fleets of barges, actually, of sand, filled with sand, which are being towed into Singapore. And it's quite relentless, this scene. Actually from Myanmar. This shots here are actually they are of Forest Island. Basically, what happened in Malaysia and Singapore, we had all these disputes about land reclamation, but at some point in time, the Malaysians seemed to stop complaining and they started reclaiming themselves. The first recorded accounts of land reclamation in Singapore were by Munshi Abdullah in 1819, which happens to be 4 months after the British arrive in Singapore and colonization begins. The process continues through post-colonization, post-colonial Singapore, to the point where the state is forced to halt this process in the 1980s. As only 7 hills were left in Singapore, today preserved for the need of air defense. This is a critical moment, actually, because before that, what happened was that all the material for land reclamation was within Singapore. Henceforth, the state began to import the material for land reclamation. The nature of this land movement is cross-border. Singapore is the biggest importer of sand. It is reported that in 2010, that 517 million tons of sand was imported since 1990. 13% of the world's sand is sold to Singapore. That's in the market. In 1997, Malaysia bans the sale of sand to Singapore. In 2007, Indonesia bans the sale to Singapore. Other sources of sand continue to provide Singapore, actually, at 4 times the price. Sand is really expensive in Singapore. And it's, you know, it comes from Myanmar, it comes from like Cambodia, it comes from Vietnam. Yeah, surprisingly, it comes from China even. And actually, it's honestly, it still comes from Indonesia and Malaysia, actually. It comes, still comes true. Actually, anybody can buy reclamation sand for Singapore. It's on Alibaba.com. If you look at that, it says down there, was it sea sand for Singapore? And then down here it says river sand. Actually, at some point in time, I don't have the slide here, but it's sitting in my computer somewhere. I'm still trying to look for it. It even said like JTC approved sand. It's some sort of standard, you know, for sand in Singapore. And it will actually be in Alibaba.com. And down here it says reclamation sand for Singapore. Very specific. And then now I would like to move on to my last example of disappearance, which is the only, this is the only picture I could find on this island, actually, that's floating on the net. I have always wanted to make a work about land reclamation. I've collected a lot of images and materials over the years for this of this process. However, I feel that the images fail to translate the complex nature and the relationship of the sea and our notions of land and state territory. I needed to find a poetic entry. And there's this island called Pulau Sejahat in Singapore. And it's interesting because actually the word Jahat in Malay means evil. So we have an evil island in Singapore, another island with a negative connotation. So what happened was that, this is the point where I find it interesting actually. It's 2002 I found this actually. And I found that if you look at the old charts, you can see like Pulau Tekong Kecil, Pulau Sejahat, and Pulau Sejahat Kecil, and you can see a buoy actually down there. It's called Sejahat. And this is pre-2002, and this is after 2002. And you see like, you know, Sejahat had disappeared. Our evil island is gone. And along with two other features actually. But interestingly, if you look at this, okay, you see Pulau Tekong Kecil down there, it's also been reclaimed, but actually it's still there in the chart. So it seems that the nature of the disappearance or erasure of this of the islands, right, it seems to be arbitrary in a sense. You know, it's so we have an evil island in Singapore. So I was looking at these charts, and you know the charts are charts. So I was very curious, what does a disappearing island look like actually? So I took a boat, a sailing boat, and I transgressed into this space actually. And I found the island there actually. It's physically it's still there. But it's totally surrounded by sand. And it kind of seems, it looks like oasis actually in the desert. And then I found the sign, you know, danger, work in progress. And then the thing is that, you know, I kind of like was working with the charts, but I found the charts, it was a very difficult way to penetrate into the work actually. So I needed something that actually had the words Sejahat on it. And then I realized that actually the buoy actually has the words Sejahat in it. So what happened was that I contacted the Marine Port Authority of Singapore to see whether they had the buoy in store, and they told me that it was lost. So then I was informed that a Japanese company had designed the buoys, all the buoys around Singapore. And they have actually an archive of all the buoy designs. So I commissioned them to build the same buoy, and I took the buoy and I dropped it in the sea for 4 weeks, and it was laying there, and I pulled it out, actually. And in 4 weeks, it was totally covered with barnacles. And the interesting thing about the nature of the biofouling that's going around in Singapore is that it's actually related to the land reclamation process of Singapore. Because, you know, when you reclaim more land, water, there's less water space, so it moves faster. So Singapore actually has the correct conditions for barnacle growth, biofouling, because of fast water temperature, and the very calm surfaces. And in fact, actually, Singapore is a place where a lot of anti-fouling companies actually do their research actually in Singapore to try and kill the barnacle, because the barnacle actually costs the shipping industry like $15 billion a year because it slows down the ships as it's kind of caught with barnacles and biofouling. So I'm trying to move on fast because I ran out of time. And then there's this other thing. As I was actually walking around, so this project actually is called As Evil Disappears, Sea State 2. Sorry. And And then when I was walking on the reclaimed land, actually, I encountered this vehicle over there. And I was very curious, and I approached a vehicle. I've been told it's called a geological survey vehicle. I approached it, and I was greeted by a geologist, an immigrant worker from Myanmar, because actually Singapore, at some point in time, they thought geology was not important, because we don't have gold or, you know, all these resources. But then we got into the sand business, you know. So we needed geologists, and a lot of them were from Myanmar. And then he was tasked to measure the solidity of sand of the sand on the land, actually. And then later on, I found out that actually why he was testing was that because when they do land reclamation, you cannot build properties around it immediately, because if you build it, it's too soft, the building will start, like, you know, you see what happens in Venice, it will start moving around and then you have broken buildings. So what happens is that the sand needs to be settled, actually. And what this vehicle does is it sits there and there's a probe and it probes into the sand, and he's like measuring the solidity of the sand, and he can be sitting there for like 2 years actually waiting for the sand to solidify. And what's really interesting is that there's this law called, and what happens is that he's waiting for it to solidify, and when it's solidified, there's this document that's actually produced and presented to the president of Singapore, the figurehead state of the state actually, to sign. And when he signs it, actually, it's almost like state ritual magic. When he signs it, it transformed the area from sea to land. Because actually, that solid, that ground. Okay, it's not. Okay, I'm gonna. It's not seen as land. So it's called the proclamation. So I also been informed that actually the fence actually represents this. So beyond in this picture, actually, you see beyond that area is not considered land. In a sense, it's still sea. So what happened was that I did an interview with this guy called Captain Wilson Chua, which was the first hydrographer of Singapore. And he it was very interesting, but one thing I wanted to note is that he was very proud of this thing that he developed, which is called the grid. To facilitate the ships lying in the anchorages, areas, references. I'm just going to go quickly. Basically, he gridded the sea in Singapore and into four parts, A, B, C, you know, each square nautical mile. And in effect, the effect of it was that he made Singapore in the sea into a kind of a parking lot. So what happened was I was kind of reacting to this, and I decided to separate the grids from the parts that were gridded from the parts that were non-gridded. And I came out of this, actually. And when I did this, actually, it made me realize two things, several things. One was that the grid was developed before the land reclamation was rampant. It means that as time progressed, the grid were the areas actually that were originally the sea now reside on land. So you can see that actually areas down there, you see like on the left side is actually gridded areas, and you see pieces of land of the grid. Those areas used to be the sea, actually. So there's kind of a residue of history that's embedded in the grid of the sea. And then also it revealed that Singapore had two states. One was that if you see it on the right, actually, as the relocation project of Singapore happened, actually, basically what the state did was that they moved everyone that was living along the coast into the interior of Singapore, which is on the right side. And that's where like people like Singaporeans live, and they vote, and they live comfortable lives, air-conditioned lives, and they complain, and they are protected. And what happens is that the areas around on the other area, that which used to be that's actually reclaimed land, that's where our banks are. That's where our oil refineries are. It's actually very much like the first talk that we were talking about, this kind of free trade zone. There's even a place called Freeport, which is a vault where you can keep art and all sorts of things. MNCs, free of tax. And in a sense, actually, this on the left side, that's the sea state, and that's like the nation state, in a sense. And it's very interesting because when the government does land reclamation, when they reclaim a new land, they don't invite like Singaporeans that come to your new land and come imagine and imagine your new land and build the new land. Immediately what happens is that when they reclaim land, it moves into a zone of like free trade zone kind of thing. So it's interesting in the sense I'm kind of thinking about it. It's like there's with the way we look at sea, you know, there's this idea of the sea being temporal and all that. And that kind of thinking is actually imposed on reclaimed land now. Okay.